Online, USAtoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, how are things with you?
Man, I'm good. I'm decompressing from the season and trying not to get depressed by the fact that college football has gone away.
It is. And I do want to get to what we saw Monday, but you were at the American Football Coaches Convention in Charlotte. So beyond your role as a sports journalist who reports on activities, I was unaware now you've got a budding new career as a host of the red or green carpet?
Well, maybe not if you saw the video. Hard to know, but it was a little bit outside my comfort zone, but it was kind of fun to do. You get dressed up, and somebody hands you a wireless stick mic, and you start interviewing coaches as they walk, as they walk down the green carpet. It was actually AstroTurf or some kind of artificial grass on their way into the award show. So the annual AFCA Coaches Award Show. It was pretty fun. We did a 2-hour show, USA Today Sports did, and they asked me to do it and be one of the co-hosts, and it was something else. Let's put it that way. I guess I'm diversifying my resume. I'm not sure that that's going to be something you want prospective employers to actually look at, but I guess it's a point on the resume.
Well, I just got a note. The E Network is online too. They want to talk to you, George.
They're going to need to talk to my people.
All right, so I'll hook you up.
I got to go get some people first.
First, you need people.
Right.
So this event originally had Art Briles scheduled to be a speaker. It was canceled. The executive director of the AFCA, Todd Berry, released a statement talking about coaches losing an opportunity. And I don't know, under the current climate of this country, what do you make of A, extending that invite and maybe not thinking there would be some blowback? Well, I mean, not only from you, but what did you hear from colleagues or coaches during that evening?
Well, I mean, I think it's tone deaf, and then I also think it's not real smart to think there wouldn't be blowback. I mean, the first thing is, at some point, we probably need to hear more from Art Briles in terms of contrition and remorse. Obviously, he's apologized and said a few things, but and maybe in his defense, he would say there's pending litigation. Okay, well, then maybe you shouldn't be out speaking until you get all that resolved, and you can sort of apologize and look, I don't think you should be cast in the outer darkness forever. I'm also one of those who thinks Art Briles is probably not ever going to coach in any significant role again because of the way the climate is. And I'm not saying that he should coach.
Right.
I'm just saying that's the way it is. The idea of having him speak on some sort of a amorphous topic, which was going to be sort of, crisis management and how you should do things differently than he did, I thought it was a bad idea all around, and I'm a little bit surprised that nobody at some point in the process, long before he became an actual item on a printed agenda, didn't say, this is not going to go well. This isn't, even if you thought it was a good idea, how do you not understand that a lot of people, other people are not going to think it's a good idea?
No, it certainly left me a scratch in my head. Talking with George Schroeder of USA Today. So each year, the Football Writers Association awards the Volney Meese Scholarship, named for a longtime member of the FWAA. So if you would please, I read that this 17-year-old young woman won the honor. And from what I understand, you're pretty familiar with her and this amazing list of academic and outside achievements.
I cannot believe you're bringing this up on the radio, but
come on, it's awesome.
You probably have a couple of listeners who know Elizabeth Schroeder, my daughter, who was younger when we moved away, and she is now a high school senior, and we are excited and proud of her and honored to be that she got a nice scholarship from the Football Writers Association of America, which really appreciate those guys. But really, that has a whole lot more to do with Elizabeth and her accomplishments to this point than it does anything else. So I'm proud of my oldest child. She's tremendous.
4-point student, National Honor Society, working with kids in Central America, class valedictorian, 17 years old. At that age, I was playing poker, going to the racetrack, and trying to get a date with Lori Calzaretta. So take a bunch of pride in that, George. That's just fantastic. Gotta love it.
Your story would probably make for an interesting
30 for 30.
Yeah, maybe it might be a 10 for 10, but I mean, it'd be a great story if you just set aside a segment or two someday.
Yeah, I probably have to clean it up, but I want to get back to another development at that convention, a movement to change the red shirt rule. So what would be different, and what are you hearing about as how much support there is for this?
Well, listen, I mean, there's two pieces of this. The AFCA, which to its, you know, we just sort of bashed them a second ago, but to its credit, the American Football Coaches Association, under Todd Barry, who's been the executive director for 2 or 3 years now, has really become more of a legitimate organization in terms of, rather than just sort of an association of guys who, you know, maybe it was good at one point for education in terms of, you know, here's how to run the power sweep and that kind of thing, but it really didn't do much to promote sort of larger goals and the coaches had. It's become a whole lot more of a force in terms of maybe trying to push things through the NCAA. So the FBS coaches all met yesterday morning, and they do this annually now, and they've been getting really good turnout. You know, maybe out of 128 coaches, they're getting 80 or 90 of them to show up, which is, to get that many coaches in a room is a big deal.
Wow.
And they came out of it, saying, hey, one of the things that they sort of decided to push was, we want to push to the NCAA these several initiatives, and one of them was the idea that the old 5 years to play four, where you get a red shirt season, is antiquated and is not, it doesn't really fit today. It used to have 120 scholarships. Now you got 85 at the FBS level. You used to play 10 games. Now you play 12, 13, 14, 15.
Yep.
If you play a conference title game and make it all the way to the national championship, and the idea is, frankly, you can run out of bodies, and you don't want to have to ask that kid who you didn't play all year long, even though he's probably good enough to, or certainly had developed through practice to be good enough to later in the season, would you play for us because we need you this week, and you burn an entire year? And so the idea is they'd like to change the redshirt rule to where it's, you can play up to four games and still keep the year, which would be similar to the rule for getting a medical hardship redshirt.
Right.
Where you can play a certain percentage of the season and yet get that year back because you had an injury that prevented you from playing the rest of the season. And so that's what they're going to push. And Todd Barry said they surveyed coaches at every single collegiate level. So meaning Division III, Division II, FCS, and FBS, and he described the support as unanimous. And I said, "Well, do you mean that at every level they supported it?" And he goes, "No, I mean it was unanimous at every level when we." And I said, "So you mean there were zero dissenting votes?" He says, "I mean there were zero dissenting votes at any of the levels." Now, all that's great, and I know I just spent a lot of time thinking about that, but the next thing is you've got to talk the NCAA into doing it, which, you know, theoretically they could push that through real fast and it could happen for next year. But the NCAA operates on a different, even if they think it's a good idea, and there's not necessarily, they may not think that. I don't understand why they wouldn't. It may take a while to get it sort of through the NCAA processes. But the idea is Todd Barry takes that and several other things that the coaches said we'd like to see changed to the NCAA in the next couple of weeks to the appropriate committees. And he says, here are what our coaches would really like to do. And then they take it from there, and you sort of try to help push that through. And we'll see what happens. I think it's an intriguing idea. I think it's better than the current redshirt rule. And it would allow you to, let's just say you didn't, never mind one game, let's just say you're playing in the Cactus Bowl, for example, or the Vegas Bowl, and you'd like to play those freshmen that you didn't play all year. Well, you can play them and not burn the red shirt.
Wow, that's a great angle,
and that,
yeah.
But, I mean, I think it's more of a modern adaptation of what the red shirt rule was when it came out, and it sort of fits sort of how the game has evolved in terms of so many more games and so many fewer scholarships than you used to have that you can run out of bodies to a certain extent. And I don't know if the optics of admitting that you can run out of bodies is a good thing for these coaches, given sort of our concerns about injuries in a violent game. But it is what it is. It's reality, and I think it would make some sense.
Well, I think that'll be something to keep an eye on. Talking with George Schroeder, USA Today, the odd topic, LeVar Ball. We've had multiple coaches from the NBA go after ESPN and outlets who interview this guy, which I don't get. But regardless, you know, this whole Kardashian least common denominator mentality, while it may be distasteful, you get concerned when you hear about the possibility that some teams might want to deny NBA credentials to media outlets because they interview him or talk with him.
Well, they can say that all they want, but they're not going to. So that's just goofy. Let me say this. I've been tired and done with LeVar Ball since the first time I heard him, okay? But the reason that those guys keep interviewing him, and that includes USA Today when at various times, although he won't speak to us anymore, apparently, but the reason that various outlets keep interviewing him and keep doing stories on him is because people keep... they can't get enough of it, and they keep clicking on it, so to speak, or they keep watching it if it's an ESPN TV report. So that's just, it's more a reflection of our culture and what the consumers are doing than it is the various news outlets deciding, let's push this story. Do I wish it wasn't that way? Absolutely. But that's what it is. You know, ESPN had Jeff Goodman in Lithuania, or wherever it was that yeah. they opened their season,
yep,
to record it. Now, is that overkill? Yeah, but you know why ESPN does it? They don't. They're not in the business of spending several thousand dollars to send somebody over to do something if it's not going to get people to watch. If people aren't going to be interested, so they clearly have decided whatever their personal taste is about, you know, or thoughts are about LeVar Ball. They've clearly decided. Or feel like people are going to watch and can't get enough of it. And so that's why they do it. So you can get mad about it all you want if you're an NBA coach or anybody else or you or me. The reason that people are writing about this guy and paying attention to what he says is because people are reading it and watching it.
Yep. That seems to be the logic there, if there's any logic at all. Third straight highly entertaining national title game. Georgia scored mid-third on that 80-yard touchdown, then not again in regulation. They threw an interception, and then there was one series where they threw a couple of passes. But is there any logic to some of the criticism that the Bulldog coordinator, Jim Chaney, got a little safer conservative from that point forward?
No, I think that's exactly right, and I think that's a failure to understand that the dynamics of the game had changed when Alabama put Tua Tagovailoa. One of these days, by next season, I promise to understand how to and be able to pronounce his last name because we're going to need to be able to.
Right.
But they didn't understand when I guess they didn't quite reckon with how much Tua's entrance had changed the game and made Alabama actually dangerous on offense where they had posed almost no danger up to that point. And I do think they got conservative. Now, let me just say this. I think a week before that, you saw Oklahoma get a little bit conservative down the stretch, too, when a first down maybe wins the game late in the fourth quarter. But I think that happened with Georgia, too. And I think it's something, and I don't know that that's the offensive coordinator. I think that's the head coach saying, let's dial this back a little bit. I think we can ground and pound a little bit and run this thing out. And they were unable to do it. There were a bunch of points in the game where if one little thing happens differently, Georgia wins, yep. No question about it. And so, and at that point, your decision to be conservative rather than throw the ball around and maybe toss a bad interception would have been validated. But when those things don't happen for you, then you're going to look back and go, maybe if we'd have just made that one play call differently, it would have been different. I mean, for as good as Jake Fromm was, and that 80-yard touchdown pass was a thing of beauty, the thing that which you referred to a second ago,
right?
He also tossed a terrible decision that turned into an interception. Now, it bounced off a helmet and went up in the air. I get that. But it was a terrible decision.
Yep.
And so he still was a true freshman. There were still chances he might make some mistakes. And so I get it. you want to kind of keep the ball in the hands of what's been your strength all year. Because let's be honest, until the playoff, they had Jake Fromm in bubble wrap. And while he had done a nice job, they had won games by handing the ball up to those running backs, and then he would be coming in and throwing on third and three or second and three or something like that. It was a much less pressure-filled situation. So it's hard for me to really second-guess Georgia's offensive play calling too much. I was more wowed in terms of that game by what happened when Nick Saban made a desperate change and got rid of the 26-2 starter at quarterback and brought in the quarterback that had played in mop-up time in four SEC games. And the kid, and by the way, they didn't just bring him in. They radically altered their game plan and started flinging the ball around the yard like crazy, like a Pac-12 team, and it worked.
No, it was amazing. Last time the kid played was against Mercer. Now they put him in there to win the national title. One final thought. This time of year with vacancies, you know, we hear the rumors, does Nick Saban want to readdress the NFL? And, you know, the 2 years with the Dolphins were mediocre, 15-17. He had Joey Harrington and Gus Frerotte at quarterback. How realistic he would give up his role as king or emperor for what might lie ahead at the next level?
Well, I think I would put the chances of that at only a little bit higher than Lutarski's great point average when he was on double secret probation.
Nice.
It might not be 0.0, but it's close. I mean, Nick Saban is 66. He's going to turn 67 next October, by the way, Halloween.
Yep.
For those of you who like to think about the darker side of Nick Saban. But he's going to turn 67 in the middle of next season. He shows no signs of the Alabama machine slowing down. And in fact, I think moving forward, assuming Tua becomes their quarterback, I think you've now seen the second significant evolution during his time at Alabama. They won 5 national titles in 9 years, and he's evolved a couple different ways. One of them was he changed how he recruited on defense. They don't have the same space-eating giant defensive tackles. They've got good, big-time good ones, don't get me wrong. And they don't have those 260-pound linebackers anymore. They changed to fit the evolution of the offense in the SEC, because after getting discombobulated a little bit 4 or 5 years ago, and that changed everything and put them back on top. Now if you add a big-time game-changing quarterback, it will be the first time they've really had that in his time. And theoretically, they could take more risks and throw the ball around the yard more, which is not necessarily the way he wants to do it, but they may have to do it to win games, at least when they get into the playoffs. And so given the fact that it feels like we might be witnessing the second big evolution that keeps Alabama on top, why would he leave when he can just sort of go as long as he wants to go at Alabama and win another title or two or seven?
And not to mention make $11.75 million a year.
It's not a bad gig.
No.
It really isn't.
If there's an opening, I got my resume already. George, great stuff as always. Enjoy your post-college football season decompression. Follow along with George, usatoday.com, on Twitter, at George Schroeder. George, always a pleasure. Have a great rest of the week and weekend, and we'll talk next week.
Look forward to it. Thanks, man.
Bye.